Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Slowpokes podcast. As always, I am Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nikolaitis.
And the game we are covering today
is The Last of Us.
The Last of Us.
The Last of Us.
Yes, you probably know that because we would have said it at the end of our previous episode.
Because that's how telling people what things are being organized.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say.
So this show is called The Slowpokes, right? And one of the things I think sometimes we might not communicate very effectively is that this isn't like a retro gaming podcast.
Yes.
It's like stuff that is like that's current and big that we should have played by now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so bizarrely, a game from 2013 is the oldest one we've covered so far,
yeah.
Right? And it kind of makes me, when I say that, oh, this is the oldest game we've done, it makes me kind of go, oh, God. We're calling these games old because they came out 3 years ago.
Oh, like, my God. Oh, 3 years ago on a previous generation.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't call The Empire Strikes Back an old movie, and that came out, what, 37 years ago? 35 to 37 years ago?
Came out before we were both alive.
Yeah, it came out. You go to my birthday, and then you go that many years again, and that's when it came out. That's actually completely untrue.
That was really bad math. I was really worried that you were, like, way older.
I'm not.
You look good for 50, 30, 60, 70.
Yeah.
Again, more bad math.
Okay, let's make this very clear. I'm not 17 years old. What the fuck?
Yeah, and you're also not 60.
Yeah, so. No. I was born in 89. There we go.
This is fine. Okay. Thank you, David.
So I just want to make it clear. Sometimes I think people might think we're actually heaps younger than we are.
I don't want to do maths on this podcast,
though. Yeah. The point is, Empire Strikes Back, not an old movie. Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters, not an old movie. An old movie is like the original King Kong.
Yeah. And The Last of Us is not a game we should really be calling old.
No, not at all. But there are some people who would say that, like, Mass Effect 1 is old.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know,
old is subjective, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like games have like a very fast pace, which is why we talk about.
Yeah,
some
that's
games
what
being
that's
old.
What we're all about.
Yeah,
but it's kind of interesting because Last of Us, it's something we scheduled a while ago, but just by coincidence, the trailer came out for Last of Us 2 not that long before we're recording this.
Yep.
Also, on fun trailers, we'll talk about the Last of Us trailer at
the end
because
why would we talk about?
We need to talk about. We try to keep the show spoiler free, obviously. Yep. At least until the end of towards the end of the podcast.
Yeah,
and to talk about what's going to happen in The Last of Us 2, we should probably talk about how that relates to plot elements of The Last of Us 1.
Definitely, especially with themes I want to bring up and stuff.
Yeah, so. definitely. But on trailers, actually, I thought it was kind of fun as well that, you know, Last of Us 2 trailer's just come out. And the new X-Men movie trailer for Logan has been bouncing around for a while. And the first thing I thought of when I saw that trailer is, wow, someone just wanted to put Wolverine in The Last of Us, huh?
Yeah.
That's just what that trailer looks like,
that's
right?
That's true, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the writers works in this game. Like, you don't actually know.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
I feel like writers worked on this game, which
yeah,
is something
that's
we'll
a good point
later.
Yeah. So the last big game we covered was Bloodborne.
Yes.
And I have some good news for the listeners. I'm not actually going to be very salty this episode.
No.
I'm not going to be the big old grouch I was last time because I actually really liked The Last of Us.
Yes. Oh, so I did as well.
That shouldn't be surprising. But I worry that I come across as a huge cynic.
Yeah, well, I think that's just who you are. You know, so, like,
thanks, dude. Man, I'm worried I look fat. Oh, that's just because you are.
Yeah, but, like, accept it.
I'm a bit worried that I come across as an idiot. David, just own it. Just own how stupid
Listen,
you are.
Listen, I'm not claiming to be a good friend. Right? This is where we're at. This is a game, actually, that I played when it came out.
Yeah.
I, in fact, got my second PS3, which was... the first one was a family one.
Oh,
and
right.
And then David questioningly put two fingers up and then...
Yeah, I had a look on my face like, why would you have two?
Because the first one, you know, I used the footstool so that I may play the other one.
If it was the 360, it's perfectly reasonable you would have bought two of them.
Of
because
course.
The first one was fucking broken.
Oh, you know,
right?
It caught on fire, so I bought like a couple more. But no, so I moved out of home. The original PS3 stayed with my family
because
it was a family device and they used it to do things. And I was gifted a new PS3 and... The Last of Us, the collector's edition, the tat of which that you can't see, but I'm pointing to.
I mean, I can see it.
Yes.
The listener cannot see.
Yes. And then I lent the game to a friend, and he never gave it back.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was me trying to think of his name, and I've forgotten it. So
his name was...
Jeffrey.
Bjorn.
Bjorn. But yeah, so I played the game right when it came out.
Yeah, and I mean, you would have been part of the big rush and a lot of the hype around that. You were a PS3 owner at that time.
Yes.
I've played it before playing it for the podcast, but I did only play the first maybe hour of the game before I put it down. When I first played it, I was really frustrated by it. And at the time, I was a little bit of like a shitty teenager type person.
Really?
Even if I wasn't, I wouldn't have been a teenager at the time when it came out. But like, I used to get really shitty at people telling me that I should play something that everybody liked. And I think that was a big factor of why I put it down then. So the first time I played it properly was only this week, just or a little bit longer. I didn't get a PS3 until well after any of this stuff came out. And so I hadn't played Uncharted or anything, but, you know, you were the one who put me onto that.
Yeah.
Obviously, talk about Uncharted. This game is obviously made by Naughty Dog,
yep.
Who are best known for making Math Jam in 1985 on the Apple II. No, they're best known for Uncharted and...
good Lord. Uncharted, is it Crash Bandicoot?
Crash Bandicoot is the one I was trying to think of. And Jack and Daxter all part of their oeuvre. I also found out that... they have like some, they're part of the ICE team or something like that. So they do a lot of the engine work for the PlayStation, for Sony and the PlayStation brand as a whole, which is part of the reason exclusives still kind of exist for them. Like it's every time an exclusive comes out, I'm like, why would you halve your audience?
All their games are on Sony. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it makes a bit more sense that they are exclusive when they are so ingrained into
the like, Sony ecosystem. Yeah.
The Sony situation.
A discussion of, exclusives is way... That's for another time.
Oh, yeah, God. No, let's not fall down that rabbit hole.
So I played the original when it first came out, like I just said.
Yeah.
I also played the remastered version
of the game. Yes, I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, because you have played the PS3 version.
Yeah, because I don't own a PS4, so I just played the PS3 version I already had.
Mm-hmm.
But you got the remastered version and you only just played that this week or whatever.
I did. That's a thing I did.
That is correct, David. Yes. The story you've related...
Sometimes I'm bad at making sentences go places, okay? The thing you said, the thing you said is correct, all right? Leave me alone. Don't bully me, okay?
I'll do my best.
I did play the remastered version of the game. So when this game came out, I actually kind of had no idea about it. Because at the time, I was in like a really emotionally different place and going through a lot of stuff. And so I was like out of the gaming scene.
Yeah.
And then... I knew of the game and then I got it and I played it, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like I knew nothing about it and then I played it and that was it.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that it was pretty soon after it came out and everything.
Yeah. I looked up the date. It was a gift for my birthday, which is a couple of weeks later.
Oh, a couple of weeks after the... Yeah. So you would have played it very, very soon.
Totally.
For me, talking about our expectations and so on and so forth. At the time, I was kind of aware of it because I had a couple of friends who wouldn't shut up about it. I was studying game design at that time. So when a new game came out, I fucking knew about it.
Yeah.
And they all went like frothing for it to the point of like I said, at the time, I hated that. When people told me to watch Firefly, whatever, I was just like, oh, fuck off. Stop telling me to watch this thing. Then you watch it. It's amazing.
I think you've said that on a previous podcast.
Yeah. It is something that it is a personality flaw that has kept me away from some cool stuff. But another one of the big turnoffs for me about this is I was fucking sick of zombies when Left 4 Dead came out. You know what I mean? This just seemed like yet another thing that tried to make an excuse as to why zombies weren't magic and no one in the game calls them zombies.
Oh!
And you've got these two characters and the story is so story. And with the story, can you the story with the story? And again, at that time... That was a really big conversation in gaming as a whole. Story is more important than gameplay. Story is more important than gameplay. Story is more important than gameplay. And it was just so oversimplified. And I was so sick of the discussion. And I put a lot of that onto the game and didn't really play it at the time. I was going into it for this round. People keep talking about the ending. And for a really long time, I was like, oh my God, for fuck's sake, it's going to go through the whole thing and then one of the characters is going to die and the other one's going to be sad. And everyone's going to be all like, it's the best ending of any game. It was so emotional.
Somebody died and I felt emotion.
Because there was music with pianos under it.
Oh, the gravity.
Oh, emotions.
Feelings.
Kill
something so I may live.
I did not have high expectations for the plot. The other thing too is that I really enjoy Uncharted games while I'm playing them. But afterwards I kind of go, wow, that was really just... kind of...
It's a popcorn game.
It's a popcorn game, yeah, right? It's just like, you, and you I'm just sitting there thinking, and I'm like, look, I know this is probably going to be better than... Like, a little is a little bit more deep than that, but come on, it's by the Uncharted people. It's just going to be really cinematic. That was another really big word that everyone was throwing around at this time. Yeah. Oh, games, they're so cinematic. I love this game because it's so cinematic. God of War is so cinematic.
We hired a director of photography.
Yeah.
And we listen to him sometimes.
We take control away from the player for 20-minute stretches and...
Ooh.
And make you watch a movie, basically.
We artificially slow the character down to develop pacing. Fuck that! That makes me so mad!
And so, like, there was a lot of these red flags that I was basically inflicting on the game and projecting on the game because of, like, frustrations I had at the time and shit like that. As I said, though, after having played it, I actually really fucking like this game, and I have no idea why I didn't like it the first time I played it. Because, yeah, like...
You mentioned that to me.
You said
that you tried to play it, and you bounced off it, and I was like...
Yeah, and there were we'll talk about some of the gameplay stuff when we get to that point, but that was mostly gameplay-related, those frustrations. Mm. And I have, after playing it again, all of... Like, I can't think of a single one of my... original impressions that I was like, oh, I hate that this happens. I hate that this happens. I didn't run into them when I played them now. And so obviously, I have been struck by the Mandela effect. I have transferred from this alternate universe where the Last of Us gameplay was shitty and frustrating into this one where it's been good.
Right, of course.
That because like my memories aren't inaccurate. No. The world has changed around
Your memories are memories.
It's like the Shazam explicit, people.
They're fact.
Yeah.
They are in... Movable. Good Lord, I ruin everything.
You're familiar with the whole Mandela effect thing at the moment,
yes,
right?
Yes, but I know it as the Bernstein Bears because I listen to
them. Yeah, there's the Bernstein Bears, but there was the big one was the Shazam thing is what's
basically
got the upswing on it.
When people are wrong, they think they come from an alternate dimension.
Yeah, basically.
It's like, that's it.
Yeah. Ta-da. I can't possibly... I'm flawless, therefore the world has morphed around me.
9/11? I remember it being 9/12.
No, you didn't. People can Google that. I'm sick of it. The point I'm trying to make here is that I fucking loved this. I had a really fucking great time.
I'm great to hear that, because after Bloodborne, I was worried about making you play some games.
Yeah, fuck off, dude. But like, as I said, Bloodborne's going to come up a couple of times, because this game, everything that I hated in Bloodborne, I feel like this game does really fucking well. Except, like, you know, there's one or two little things that were a bit off. But yeah, this was fucking great. I had an awesome time with it. And you mentioned the topic of Bloodborne. Maybe one of the first things we should talk about, spoiler-free, is how the game looks. Because one of the things I really love about The Last of Us is that it actually does environmental storytelling rather than everybody saying it does and then having it not do it.
Yeah.
So...
Okay, but, yeah, all right.
No, but the environments in The Last of Us are fucking amazing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, that's great. What was the game? It was like in The Witcher, to quote another game we previously talked about. Yeah, it feels fleshed out.
And yeah. It's just really, really obviously lived in. Like, some of the early parts of the game you're in, you're in Boston is where you start. And there's graffiti... on the walls, like protest stuff that you know, elucidates the sort of the political situation of where you are. You know, they do have some of those a little bit on the nose newsreel style things in their opening cutscene. If you didn't watch that at all, you would know who the Fireflies are. You would know that you're in a martial law situation. You would know that food is scarce, all just because of what you're seeing around you. And you might
even just ignore that stuff.
Yeah.
A better experience. Ignore that.
Yeah, I often forget that it's there because it's just so, like, we didn't need it spelled out.
I think I walked out of the room when it was on. I was like, boring. Because the game does do it so much better.
We're talking like Half-Life 2 levels.
And also just any time you... basically, like, stumble into a building, you can, like, take a look around and go, oh, this is what happened
here. Yeah, like, and that's one of the things that's very interesting. Like, even when you're going through, like, generic houses and stuff, it's not just, here's empty room with rotting bookshelves.
Oh, yeah, this is room 7 with C and D furniture, and then there's E environmental effect in the corner.
Yeah.
Loot is randomized.
We used town 4 pallet because that we're in the fourth town.
Yeah.
So everything has to adhere to that. Like, you go into a room and it's like, okay, this is a bar. This is a butcher shop. This is a house. And this is like a teenager's bedroom. You know what I mean? Like every room you go in, it's not literally every room you go into.
And it's not like perfect.
Yeah. And obviously there's still points where you're like, wow, it's pretty convenient that this wall came down in the exact way to lead me to the next part of the level. But you know, when you're in these places, they're not just generic. And I feel that that's... It does a lot to kind of engage with some of the themes that come up in this game about, like, sort of the nature reclaiming the world and stuff like that.
When you look at it, there's a real diversity in sort of environments.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
in an apocalypse game. You go from the cities to the country, and it's the season changes.
Yeah.
Spring, summer, you go through all the seasons, and you get to see flowers bloom. And I'm almost surprised sometimes by how vibrant the game can look. And
feel. It does keep that fresh and interesting. And like you say, you start in these cities, and then you have to go outside the wall very early in the game, and so you see a lot of like the grass and vines and stuff, and then you go back into the city, and it's got so much variety in that way. It's not just, like you say, one of these apocalypse games where everything is grey or brown or that other kind of brown.
Yeah, good lord, if there was any bright colours in an apocalypse story, people lose their minds.
No, but the aesthetics and the environmental design is used really, really well, because one of the... So the game's set in the South, and that was another one of the things that turned me off the game as well. It's like, oh, it's a zombie game. Where's it set? The American South? A fucking course it is. God, we could never have a zombie game in, like, East London, could we?
They do.
I know they do, but at the time, I picked the worst example. In like,
it's called Zombie U, or yeah, Zombie on computer.
Yeah, but you know what, like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, other than that one, think of a zombie apocalypse setting that isn't in the American South.
I mean, I can think of, like, several. Like,
really?
To
me, it feels
World
like
War Z isn't set in the South.
Okay.
There's a British TV show which is like set on like a Big Brother style show. That's a zombie show.
Okay.
That's set in the UK. 28 Days Later is set in Britain.
There's a lot that are set in Britain.
Sorry, you're saying the South, and I'm like, I don't know if zombies are tied to the South for me.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm getting a lot of walking.
As tropes, though, and like as like kind of like a convention, I can understand, but I'm just
playing. Yeah, like, so I was being hyperbolic. I should be clearer. To me, it feels like all of them are set there because of like The Walking Dead and shit like that. And there's a lot of like these gruff, real American
I can see the parallels. You're
works with his hands type
certain characters, especially because the main characters, it's set in the South. The main characters have Southern accents, and there's always in a zombie apocalypse the gruff kind of guy with the guns and stuff like that. And you're like, you would be in jail if the world wasn't like this. but I can see why that would be a bit tiresome.
Yeah, and I also like the whole reason I brought that up is because it was an unfair assessment of the game before I played it. Right, like at the time, I was like, fuck, can we get this set somewhere else, please?
Yeah.
So you've got it. This kind of theme, like this frontier kind of theme. There's going to be a couple of points in this where I turn on my literature kind of brain a bit. But like that whole kind of sense of like that frontier of like, you know, nature is no longer tamed. It's dangerous to go outside the wall. We have to move west and stuff like that. It's all very deliberately done. As part of like evoking sort of that frontier style story, and the way that the environments come up, and they are incredibly varied, is super, super interesting, I think. Because they could have very easily had it just be dilapidated city after dilapidated city after dilapidated city. But they did a lot to actually make it really visually engaging, and I love that. What's some of the other shit that looks really good? You played the remaster. Is there anything that stands out to you, like, that they had better in that?
Yeah, so I got the remastered version because I have a PS3 and a PS4. And like I said, Zane, that's the jerk.
Yeah.
Zane, you still got my copy of Last of Us, although I did forget your name, so we're even. I didn't have a copy, and I wanted to play it, and so I got it for the PS4, and I got the remastered because it had all the DLC. Why not? Yeah. Yada, yada, yada. And I was, you know, ready to... my expectations aren't high for remasters.
No.
And so like I was like, oh, it'll look pretty or whatever. To me, it looked exactly the same.
Yeah. It
felt really similar. It did play very smoothly.
Yeah.
No frame rate drops, no nothing like that.
I feel like, I think 30 frames was what I was playing mine at. You were probably playing it at 60, if nothing else.
I'm pretty frame blind. So, like, unless I can't see.
Well, I mean, I know, I definitely noticed the frame rate in Bloodborne. I did not have issues with the frame rate of this.
Definitely not on the PS4. So, I will say the game played smoothly. I don't remember it not, though. But
I didn't really have any major slowdowns or anything like that.
While the game still looks visually striking, it did look like a game from 2013.
Yeah.
When I played it on the remastered, though, it didn't really.
It's also like worth mentioning, like, because we're talking about the difference between the original and the remaster. The original looks really fucking good. Like,
it's a really beautiful game.
It's still like
people who understand how to use like the tools that they have really well.
But that almost sounds like you're qualifying it. Like just from a fidelity sense, from a photorealism sense, it still looks very good. Like the facial animations are amazing. The way that people look in this game, at the very least close up, is incredible.
It's always surprising to me when you think of a game that goes on and on about how realistic it looks, like what was the cop one? L.A. Noir?
L.A. Noir, right. Yeah.
And like you talk about, oh, the realistic faces there, and then they look, to me, terrifying.
Yeah, it looks like you've got a bunch of those blank-faced mannequins, and they're just pointing a film projector at their head.
Yeah, right. And then you have like a game like Last of Us. It's like, oh, it's just a game. And to me, it feels way better.
Yeah,
and because it just sits with that stylistic tone. And they also
like there's a name for this, and I don't know what it is, but it's about sort of breaking from the uncanny valley and all that stuff. Like the use of imperfections and oddities in the way people look to make them more believable. And so you'll notice like little things. The first time I saw Ellie and I was looking at her face, I was like, well, her eyes are kind of low on her head. Like that's a little, it's kind of strange they built it that way, but that's part of what makes her look so natural after I go, huh. Because the only reason I'm going, huh, is because I'm so used to playing games like The Witcher where everybody looks like flawless.
And unless they're like a particular character, they all look like Adonis's.
Yeah.
Or they just, Adonis size? What's the female version of Adonis?
Well, I would say Aphrodite. Like Adonis.
Right. Anyway. That's not a
sentence. Because I'm pretty sure Adonis is a specific character, of Greek mythology.
I should know, being Greek, but I don't.
But the point is, they look ridiculous. And in this, they look very, very human.
Yeah.
Tess, I felt, was just on the cusp of being too attractive to be believable in the world. But other than that...
I have one.
Yeah.
That's not... Sometimes people are attractive in the world.
If there was an apocalypse today, Taylor Swift wouldn't disappear. Like,
she would be somewhere stabbing someone for supplies.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, let's go back to imagining Taylor Swift stabbing people for food. Just imagine your favorite celebrity...
Whoever it is.
...dressed in rags, violently stabbing someone for supplies. Anyway,
so yeah, look, the differences weren't that great because like between the remaster and the original, but there's so many like amazing little things that they do well.
And the game is beautiful on its own. So like,
one of the things that, so I'm a real sucker for a good IK system. And
David, what is an IK system?
I was going to say, should I explain that to the audience?
No. You should explain it to me.
Oh, right.
I don't know.
So I'll keep it very brief. IK stands for inverse kinematics. Whenever you have, like, imagine a character walking up some stairs.
Okay. Right? I'm doing it right now. I'm picturing them walking up stairs.
Yeah, so when they walk up the stairs, their feet have to be in a different position when they would normally be. And so then you have to calculate where their knee would bend to look natural. And so IK systems are used mostly for people's legs, but occasionally, and this is starting to come in more and more, and you'll generally notice it more in the technically impressive third-person games, they also have IK systems for people's hands. And that, I'm such a sucker for that, right?
Actually, now that you mentioned and explained what the hell you were talking about, IK systems, I think Naughty Dog, especially with the Uncharted series and with this, are very good. It must be their engine work, because they do some... like engine stuff.
Mm.
They are so good at getting that right.
Yeah. And like, so there's, whenever you take cover behind something, because it's not a press up, but press X to enter cover or whatever, you can tell that Joel is in cover because he'll put his hand against whatever the cover it is he's taking behind and stuff like that. If you're sprinting, and there's like, this was where I first noticed is when right at the start of the game, when the Firefly ambush hits that truck.
Yeah.
And so you sprint away because you have to learn how to sprint by holding the sprint button. I ran past like a bollard on the road, and it just, he was running past, Joel just kind of brushed his hand past it to make sure he didn't run into it. And just, it looked so real.
Yeah.
And it was such a tiny little thing. One of the other things that I like about the cover system in this is like, if you and Ellie or you and Tess are taking cover behind something, Joel will kind of lean over them. And they'll kind of huddle up right against the wall, and Joel will sort of be crouched over them, and it looks very protective.
I mean,
but all of that is possible and looks so convincing because of the IK system they use.
And that's a perfect example of like, it's in video games thrown into this thing where people are like boxes.
Yeah.
They're like boxes that can't mesh or phase through each other. And so you get that moment where there's like, oh, there's only one place to hide, but the AI character's there and I can't get them out of the way.
Yeah, and this is... I don't know if this idea of taking cover around someone got patched in at some point, but I very distinctly remember being... part of the reason I was frustrated with this game the first time I played through is because Ellie or Tess or whoever would take cover behind something where I was trying to take cover, and then I'd get spotted because I wasn't in the cover. And so maybe I'm, again, Mandela effect, maybe I completely, maybe I came from a different universe where my thing existed. Or they've, you know, maybe they patched it in. Most likely, I just misremembered shit.
I do feel like they might have patched it in, though, because characters will still stand in doorways and you still have to bump them in that video gamey kind of way where you like bump up against an AI character and nudge them gently out the way.
Yeah. That's and sometimes they're okay, like when it's just a doorway, but then you'll get stuck in like a hall or something and they do that like 9 times in a row. But this is all nitpicky stuff, right? We were talking about the little shit that I like. One of the other things I actually really like about this, you only see like 2 of them in the whole game because it does that sort of load as you go type thing.
Yeah.
But I really love the loading screens in this because like the spores are a really big part of like
how the virus spreads.
Because it's again, this is another one of those things I had a bit of a pet peeve about. When people make a zombie game and they bend over backwards to be all like, no, but these aren't like zombies.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So they're cordyceps, which is a real fungus that affects ants in real life.
And it controls their minds.
That is true to some extent. The ants, in the later stages of the infection, they'll climb up high onto like flowers and branches and stuff so that when the fungus does erupt from their body and their brain, the spores are released from a high vantage point. So that actually is very terrifying, right?
And even though it's an ant.
If you don't want to sleep tonight, look up the cordyceps fungus.
Ugh.
If you don't want to sleep, look it up.
I'm getting chills.
Also, just completely unrelated, look up living rocks.
What?
There's this type of like mussel and it looks like a rock on the outside.
What?
But it's a delicacy in some parts of like, I think, the Mediterranean. And what? So they, you can cut this thing open and you open it up. And like that, if there are pictures of this on Wikipedia, it's this rock that you cut, they've cut open. And on the inside, there are organs and stuff.
Ugh.
And it's so upsetting. Yes. It's so upsetting.
Why did you tell me about this?
Yes.
What are you
People
doing?
Eat these things.
People eat all kinds of things.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, boy. What a segue.
Yeah, sorry about that. But, like, the loading screens with those spores, they're very delicately done.
Thing to
segue. Yeah. And what part of what I like, this is kind of sucks, because I've just said something disgusting, right? What I really like about those loading screens is they're actually very pleasant in a lulled into a safe sense of security type way. Like, you see these spores just floating on the wind.
Gently
you have
wafting.
This, yeah, gently wafting on the wind. And as the loading screen gets more complete, they have spread to more of the screen.
Yeah.
And it's got the light acoustic guitar underneath it. And that's one of the things as well. Like, you know, juxtaposition is a wanky word. But I love that. I love how this game contrasts like moments of beauty, moments of return to nature with the fact that like what's destroying humanity is nature.
Yeah. Actually, that's a great point.
Yeah, you know, it's not some magic, it's not some man-made virus, which is, actually, I haven't actually really thought about this before. And basically, in most zombie movies, it's basically like a man-made virus, right?
There's a bunch of them where it's unexplained.
Yeah.
And then there's the bunch of them where it's...
Where it's the 28 Days Later is a man-made one. Yeah, and that's the most well-known one. Yeah.
And then there's the
Walking Dead, I'm pretty sure it's just a natural
out-of-nowhere
phenomenon.
I think it's a disease, but yeah, they don't know. I think a lot of them they don't know. And in some
I Am
of them,
Legend, it's man-made.
And there's also the ones, the really old-school ones where it's weird racial voodoo magic.
Yeah, but yeah.
Most people don't do that anymore because it's considered inappropriate.
Yeah, exactly. So I really do like that about this particular game is that they have this idea that the virus is man-made. No, it's not man-made. It's just part of nature.
Yep.
And I actually, like, this is the bizarre thing. Because, like, in some stuff it's like, oh, you know, man's hubris. Man is the one destroying itself. Man is the one. Men are the true monsters. Rah. And I obviously have that theme as well that, you know, man is the true monster. But
because we are.
In this, I actually bizarrely find it that, like, you know, it's the environment attacking and destroying humanity. There's some really big environmental themes in this game.
Totally.
Because it's like, you see humanity recede and you see nature return.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of the most safe and beautiful places you go are the ones that are the furthest from what's left of civilization.
Totally.
It's really quite interesting. Was there anything else you want to talk about how the game looks, how it plays out
so
in that way?
In terms of how the game looks, more so on what you were talking about before with like the animations, like the IK system.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
There's moments in the story where things happen. Mm-hmm. What a great way to describe that. Emotional, like key emotional points in the game that then up getting they get reflected in the passive animations of the characters.
Yeah.
So you know how, like, sometimes in video games you'll be playing and characters will say contextual things and they'll do, like, barks is what they're called.
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, need ammo's over here or this
or
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's moments in the game, especially as you're going through the world as Joel with Ellie, where something will happen but with their relationship. And then the game will reflect that in the animation of the characters.
Yeah, no, I really do like that.
Even passively. So, like, I remember this moment reasonably early in the game, which I won't discuss the story elements of. But the point is, it's like, it's reflected in just the idle animations of the characters when you're exploring the world and not just in the cutscenes.
I think the one you're talking about, that's where... Yeah, so John just acted something out, so I know what he's talking about there. Yeah. But just to keep it spoiler-free, basically, Joel and Ellie, there's a tension between them because of the decisions that one of them's made. And, like, you can see in the way that Ellie's animated from there. Like, Joel's just trying to ignore it.
And Ellie is just very upset about how he's reacted to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she just refuses to look at you. But she doesn't just not look at you. She'll be normal sitting there, but then when you approach her, the character will just look away.
Yeah.
And, like, become nervous.
One of the things that stood out for me in that section is that Ellie's really into comic books. And if you find a comic, normally Joel will shout out, like,
oh,
hey, here's one of these comics that you like. And Ellie will be like, oh, cool. You can find a comic during this part. And he finds it. And he's like, he just says under his breath, oh, here's another one of those things that she likes. But he doesn't talk to her.
Yeah.
Because he knows that there's tension and it's awkward and he doesn't want to shout it out or anything, but, like...
Again, it's like this game had writers that worked through the whole game.
Yeah, because when you say passive animations, you're kind of talking about, like, as just throughout the course of the game. Like,
when I think of sort of passive and active, to me, a cutscene is when they're animating things very specifically.
Yeah, that's, like, all fully mo-capped and it's all scripted and,
I can't think of a better word for the animations that occur when you're just moving through the world in the game sections, quote-unquote.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of like the in-game animations. Yeah. I know what you mean. It's tough to describe, find a word for that.
That's why I referenced the barks, because those come in, like, you
they're just part of what happens as you navigate the world.
The flow. Yeah. And that's what this, and the game, it does that to great effect.
Yeah, no, it is very cool. Like, I'm super impressed by a lot of the animation and stuff, and I do want to talk about some of the stuff that happens in the cutscenes. We'll keep it on spoiler-free stuff for the moment. I reckon we'll go talk about some of the combat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
oh boy, the combat.
Yeah, like, I find the combat in this game really interesting because it's still a fucking shooter, okay? Let's keep that out there.
It's a third-person shooter.
It's a shooter. You can use guns to get through levels combat environments, and it's not like, I don't know, like Thief, I guess? It's not like, oh, you get seen and now you're fucked. Like, you can fight. But because of that whole kind of scavenger-type situation, ammo is very scarce, and, like, so it's a really interesting sort of way to use combat.
One of the things that surprised me most about the game was the amount and depth and of the stealth sections as well.
Yeah,
because it's true. It's an action game. It's a shooter. You can play through the whole game, the whole game, and not like there's very rarely moments where the game's like, oh no, you can't shoot your way through this.
Yeah,
it's almost the entire game where
there are points where it would be quite hard. I mean, like, whenever I get to a clicker section,
oh yeah,
I don't want to pull out a gun.
That's true. But you could.
Yeah.
Right? And I to the game's credit, to me, it gives you actual options. Because if you're terrible at stealth sections, then you will shoot your way through.
Like, yeah.
And it sets that up. I always forget. And when I replayed the game, I was surprised by, like, how often the game would start an encounter with the stealth. Like, you're in stealth.
I almost feel like it's the default. Like, it's not that you're playing the game wrong, but, like, every time I came across a situation where I was like, okay, some people have to die for me to keep going, I would always start stealth. Even if I knew that, like, look, at some point, the guns are going to come out. And there are some points where they do force that. For the most part, you can get through most of these encounters just stealth only. And part of the reason that the way they encourage that is, like I said, it's with the scarcity of ammunition. And cards on the table here, I played this game on easy because the first time I played it on normal, I hated it, right? So, like, there are points, perhaps, on harder difficulties where the scavenging becomes really tedious. But for me, I felt like it's a good level. And I felt like there was enough of a need for me to, like, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Explore.
I felt like ammo and stuff was scarce enough that I always wanted to go into everything stealthing first.
It made the decision of shooting and that kind of...
Yeah, it's a tactical decision.
Yeah, you don't just go in guns blazing. Yeah.
Like, when you play Deus Ex, like Mankind Divided, when you choose, do I want to shoot or do I want to stealth? That's just about you deciding how will I have more fun.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, I actually felt like, you know, I would go into some fights and I'd be like, shit, I only have one shiv.
I would go.
But I've got, three full magazines of bullets. I'm just going to shoot through this one because I can't afford to give up this shiv.
I've gone into so many fights with no bullets. Because I did play the game on hard.
Yeah. So we're very, very distant far as...
And so ammo was scarcer. And even on hard, I still felt it to be, especially the ammunition, very balanced. Because the game does give you a wealth of tools. It gives you shivs to take enemies out quickly.
Yeah.
It gives you explosives.
You say a wealth of tools, just to be clear, it gives you a great versatility of tools. A wealth of tools implies that you're tripping over ammo every 3 seconds.
That's a very great point.
Yeah. And I do very much like that. I think that one of the things as well that I really like about the combat is there's a kind of a weight to it. Because even when you compare it to the other big Naughty Dog action game,
Uncharted,
that is primarily a shooter. Like, I don't think there's a single fight you could get through in that entire game just through stealth.
No.
And so... A much bigger sense of mobility behind Nathan Drake. He can scramble up the sides of buildings. He can hang off one-handed and shoot with a pistol, all this kind of shit. Yeah. Whereas in this, you fire a shot and the kickback is so much heavier and it takes so much longer for even like the basic pistols to return to a firing position.
Totally.
And so if you fire and you miss, right? So you've got like, if you've got a zombie charging at you, you fire and miss one shot, he's 3-4 meters closer to you, but by the time you can get the second shot off.
And you can feel your heart skip the beat. You're like, every bullet is like, every shot missed is a shot wasted. And like you said, as when a horde of zombies approach you, it goes from some games where it's like rote shooting, mowing down hordes to like,
exactly. Like when you start, that's one of the other things that I find a little bit unbelievable about games like Left 4 Dead. You've got these four people like mowing down hordes of zombies. But like, how did the world get to this state? Whereas in this, like, you see a room, you've got four infected in it, and you're just like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Like, you actually, even, as much as you've been playing the game, you do feel, like, that sense of risk, even in really basic sort of encounters.
Left 4 Dead's a great example, though, because I think when you compare this game to Left 4 Dead, both games know what their tone is.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Play to the strengths.
Yeah.
Left 4 Dead knows it's an arcade game, and it plays towards it. It doesn't pretend not to be. And The Last of Us does the same. It's like, this is the road with zombies. This is how the game is going to go. Fights will be brutal. Fights will be desperate.
You will throw
bricks into people's faces.
I want to talk very briefly about, fights will be brutal. Because, look, this is, like I said, it's an action game. This game does not have an anti-violence message. Right? A lot of people love to say, oh, yeah, this shooter speaks out against war. It's like, it still glorifies it because it makes you the hero in it. So that still does happen.
Yeah.
But I do like that there is a bit more weight given to it. When you strangle someone out, if Ellie sees you do it, she comments on like how big it was.
Especially early during the game. Yeah.
When you play, we'll go back to Uncharted, right? Yeah. When you stealth kill someone in Uncharted, you just kind of like a quick crack and they drop, right? Yeah. It's just very quick. Whereas in this, you choke them out and they're like clawing at your face and stuff while they're going down.
Yeah,
and
every time.
That, like, all of that stuff is...
Even when you do it to the infected as well, the zombies, who you think would be like, oh, it's just a zombie, you just smack its brain or whatever, you still choke them out, too.
Yeah, and you still kind of see that even though they're totally taken over, that they still have a survival instinct, and it is...
And it makes no... It presents it the way it is, brutal, right? Inhuman, almost.
Yeah, and it's very much worth mentioning, like I said. It shows this brutality, but you're still supposed to... Like, there is still that sense of, like, accomplishment and achievement and power that comes from your ability to inflict violence.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to get too deep into all of that stuff, but it's not an anti-violence message in the game, right? No. It doesn't have an anti-violent ideology, but I do like that... Like you said, it fits the tone that it's going for.
The Last of Us is, like, it knows the tone.
Yeah.
It knows what it's doing. It knows what it's saying.
You were talking about, like, because we're talking about, like, the heaviness of the combat and stuff. Yeah. Like, you can upgrade guns and so that they become less unwieldy. I almost dislike that because 100%. I kind of liked how useless guns were,
Interesting. I agree with you. So, like, that's a great point. Like, the guns, they feel like physical things. They feel like anything, there's benefits. Yeah. Like, the different guns they give you have strengths and weaknesses that are clear, and you can't even deviate from them. But sometimes it kind of feels like with the upgrades that you can kind of smooth out a lot of the rough edges. Yeah, and this is
like, you
fun.
Can get the pistol, the first pistol you get has like 6 rounds in the magazine initially. But by the time you fully upgrade it, it's got like 18 bullets in the magazine or something like that.
That, and again, that's a perfect example of like, I never had that many pistol bullets. I was playing the game on hard. I never had that clip full.
Yeah.
Why does the game do that? So the game has crafting in it, not only with upgrading weapons, but also with crafting items, like explosives or Molotov cocktails or
med packs and shivs and all that kind of stuff.
And when I think these are two great sort of crafting ideas to compare to each other. And I like this three. The game also has a pill-based upgrade system.
Yeah.
So the way that the crafting works for the tools, like the explosives or the cocktails or the med packs, is you scavenge in the environment for like alcohol or rags.
Yeah, and one of the details I fucking love is alcohol and rags. You use that to make a med kit. Exact same ingredients are used to make a Molotov, and so you have to choose whether a weapon is more valuable than your own health.
Yeah, like, which is a great decision to give players. It's like, do you want that health or do you want an offensive defensive? Right?
Yeah.
Great decision, real choice. Rewards the explanation with like this wonderful
and there's like a thematic sort of appropriateness of like I need to find a scissor handle and some tape to wind up a shiv, you know?
You upgrade the weapons through random junk. It's always screws and nuts and bolts. And you upgrade Joel's character with some of like he has some
with
upgrade things.
Supplements.
Yeah. And it's just like,
oh, look, he took 50 echinacea. Now he has an extra health bar. It's like a bit...
And this is something you noted. It feels very video gamey.
Yeah, and that's one of my little disappointments with this. It's nowhere near as bad as, you know, again, Bloodborne.
Yeah.
But there are these moments where it's like, oh, shit, I've been hit. I don't have any med kits. Oh, fuck, I'm low on ammunition. Oh, look, I found a tin of beans. Nom, 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 nom. My health is full again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, shit like that. It's just like, you do everything else so well. Oh, I'm going to eat a candy bar to get some health back. It's like,
And like, let's be honest. Like, the idea of a med pack recharging health, right? That's odd.
But it's like, okay, I've got an open wound. I'll bind it. And now I can actually start to move that arm a little bit. I find that a little bit more believable.
That's true. No, and like, there's no reason why you couldn't have found like painkillers.
Like
classic match.
And that's the thing. Like, if you wanted to have the med kits be the thing you can carry around with you, but the painkillers be the type of health, because when you can't carry food, you consume it as soon as you pick it up.
Yeah.
And so I understand from a gameplay perspective why they'd want the instant recharge health right now or the carry this with you so you can recharge later and how that's distinct and dynamic. But yeah, painkillers I would have felt like would be a more...
Yeah, and to me, there's moments in the game when Joel finds new weapons, and that feels like upgrades as a natural course of the game.
Yeah,
you know, even discover you discover like lots of different weapons, and I don't want to spoil any of them because it's just fun when you find them.
Yeah,
right, and they're kind of naturally left around the world too. I almost feel like you could miss a lot of them if you weren't thorough. You just walked straight through, and that feels like a great way to naturally introduce game upgrades.
Yeah,
like, say an airbrush. Brackets, right?
Yeah.
To it. Like, so why couldn't, as Joel progresses, he finds a scope for the rifle rather than you find 50 bolts.
Yeah.
So you can now make a scope. Like,
yeah.
It just let me down. And I just thought the game was doing so much. And then it was just like...
Yeah, see, I agree with you. I do think it's really strange and it stood out to me and I definitely thought of it in the moment. I should also mention, though, it is a video game. And so, like...
And as you're playing it, though, like, when I was playing it, it didn't bother me.
And it's also like, you also have to ask yourself, where do you draw the line? Because, Joel has health bars. Joel can see how many bullets he has in the gun at a glance. When Joel reloads his gun, he doesn't have to individually load each bullet into the clip. He's just, as soon as he reloads, he magically keeps all of the exact right bullets, you know?
So I think there's something to talk about with video games, which is, it's like where you make those distinctions.
Yeah.
And also... what annoys you after you finish playing and what annoys you as you
finish playing? Yeah, that's a really good point. So like that, and that's for me the difference between a nitpick and not. If it bothers you while you're playing, I feel like it's a legitimate thing to bring up. This thing about like the crafting
system.
Yeah, like for me, he had some pills and got an extra stats. I noticed it. It didn't bother me as I was playing.
And then like I would still scrounge constantly. Like, I would just do that loop and I didn't mind.
Mm. And it's, you know, there's a couple of different things about that, like, you know, some people would say that the fact that Ellie is, she can never be spotted, you know,
But imagine if she could.
Yeah.
And you would, every time she did, you would get so
angry, right? And some people's like, oh, it makes no sense that she can't be spotted. You're supposed to be trying to protect her. Like, it makes no sense that she can't be hurt. It's like, if she was dying as a course of gameplay every 3 minutes, you wouldn't take her protection seriously because you'd seen her die like 600 times.
And like, what they could have done was like, oh, if you're not looking at Ellie, like, maybe Ellie, like, I think there's a game called, there's a Sherlock Holmes game.
Yeah.
Right? Where Watson never actually walks, he teleports to
you.
So when you turn around and when you turn back, Watson appears behind you.
Yeah.
And it's terrifyingly disconcerting. And they could have done that in this, right? To make Ellie always hiding.
Yeah.
That would have just been weird.
Yeah. I think that they made the exact right choice. And it feels basically what I'm trying to say here is any design choice you make, you're sacrificing something for the sake of something else.
Yep.
Here, they've sacrificed realism for the sake of flow.
And good Lord, I'm so happy they did that.
Yeah, especially I think that was the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So there are some stuff that is a little bit video gamey, but ultimately, I did feel pretty immersed in the whole thing. Something you actually brought up, I forget, maybe it was during the Witcher episode, something like that. You said that you hate how in some games you can't jump.
Yes. Because
it makes no sense that you can't jump this tiny gap. One of the things I actually really love about this is like a good example of a little detail like this is that when you use a ladder or something to climb up a wall, you can pull the ladder up after you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's one of these things, almost the opposite of that. It's just like, oh, that makes so much sense. That fits in the world.
Yeah.
And it makes them really interesting. Really?
There's like moments where you can pull a ladder back up?
Yeah, no, definitely. That's part of puzzle solving. There's not that many points. Yes.
There are some puzzles, but to counter what you've just said, because I'm a paranoid kind of guy, like, you would, like, do a whole bunch of work to navigate an obstacle, and then my brain's like, and now undo that so no one can follow you.
Yeah.
And once a ladder gets set after the puzzle is solved, it's immovable.
Yeah, and again, that's one of those things where it's like, break realism for the sake of whatever. One thing that, if we're going to get on those little nitpicky things, never pull the knife out. What are you doing? Oh, like, that one always gets me. It's just like, oh God, he's been stabbed. Okay, get ready. Just breathe. We're going to pull the knife out. You're a doctor. You should know not to do that. You leave it where it is until you can actually give him medical attention.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, that's how Steve Irwin died.
Ooh, boy. That got dark.
Yeah, but legit.
but that's a fact.
Honestly, okay.
First aid. We're going to have a first aid section of the podcast.
Yeah.
This is not actual medical advice. Honestly,
this is not actual medical advice. We're not doctors. But honestly, seriously, guys, if anybody does get stabbed, don't take the thing out until a paramedic has arrived.
Any first aid med kit that, first aid booklet you see, you bandage around the implement that.
Yeah.
You know, like,
please don't.
Just remember
it could be really dangerous.
And it could save your life.
Yeah. And it, you know, I know people whose lives have been saved by knowing that. Yeah. So just be careful out there, folks.
We're not medical professionals. Please see your doctor.
Yeah. I feel like we're at the point now that we can kind of just need to start going to spoiler territory.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the plot and some of the themes.
Oh, speaking of themes, like, I have to confess, when I first threw the... I'm not the brightest guy when I first experience something. I really only see how deep things are after multiple experiences. Yeah. And while I usually get a story, like, I'm very good at understanding a narrative structure, themes are really hard for me to sometimes get. This podcast is a perfect example of putting me in like an active mindset to receive them.
Mm.
But when I first played this game, didn't. It was just a nice, fun action game.
That blows my fucking mind. So, like, I know that I brought this up before. I've studied literature, and so my brain thinks that way about everything all the time.
Yeah.
But even without that, it surprises me that you weren't really aware of the parallel between Sarah and Ellie and Joel's feelings about that whole situation.
I just didn't think it was important.
So, like I said, spoilers are off here. This is early game stuff, but Joel, right when the outbreak happens, Joel is like a young parent. He's probably 30-something, and he's got like a 13, 14-year-old daughter. While they're escaping the initial outbreak, the daughter dies.
Yeah. This is the way Dead Island should have started.
Yeah.
Right? Especially after the trailer they released where they had the little
girl that, falling. That lie.
They basic lie. Yeah. That's how that game should have started.
So, like, the game starts off with Joel's daughter, Sarah, being killed as part of
you even play her as you explore the house.
Yeah, like, stuff like that. So, like, it starts off with a fridging. And, you know, as much as they do characterize Sarah in the time they have, a fridging is a fridging.
I'm sorry, what was that?
A fridging, you know that trope?
Good Lord, no.
Okay, Okay, so a fridging is when, in an early part of a male character's story arc, a woman is killed to give them give their character motivation and depth.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Okay. So, and it's very you. It's very popular. It's named after some character in comics where the woman was literally killed and stuffed in a fridge.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, you know, Sarah dies at the start, and that motivates Joel. And so when, you know, Ellie comes in, there's all of this stuff about how this is like 20 years later, but Ellie is about the age Sarah was when she was killed.
And it's clear that Joel isn't really the most mindful kind of guy, and he doesn't really, you know, process his feelings very
constructively. Oh, no, but this is the thing. This is because, like, when you say, oh, I didn't really notice any of these themes about, you know, fatherhood and how, you know, their relationship was played out. Oh, they make it real obvious, though. Yeah, like, I'm not trying to shit on you here, John, but there's a point where, like, early on, Tess, like, Joel is resistant to the idea of smuggling Ellie, and Tess looks at Ellie and then looks back at Joel and goes, I get it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I did too. Joel, do you not get it?
I think Joel might not get it. But
I think he did, and, like, he totally knows that Tess is... hit the nail on the head with that. And so there's a lot of this stuff about, like, Joel is very resistant to let Ellie in and stuff like that. And there are some ways in which she is similar to Sarah in the way that, like her character is very outspoken and shit like that. And they have a similar taste in music and things as well.
I can't imagine... What was his daughter's name again?
Sarah.
You've just said it a million times.
Yeah.
I can't actually remember what Sarah's voice was. It's just Ellie's voice. Like,
no, I remember it quite distinctly. Sarah has a southern accent. Obviously, she has a Texan accent, whereas Ellie doesn't.
Yes.
Every voice actor did an amazing job in this game. So, totally. Obviously, we'll just cover that real quick. Troy Baker plays Joel, and this was, like, his big breakout role as far as video game awareness of him went. Like, he's now the voice actor of the male voice actor.
One of the
games.
Three.
Yeah, one of, yeah. I've written it down, and I should be, I think it's Ashley Johnson.
Yep. Ashley Johnson is the voice actor for.
Yeah, she plays Ellie, and she does a fucking incredible job as her. Yeah. The woman who plays Sarah is Hannah Hayes. And even though she's only there very briefly, like I said, the characterization of Sarah is so deep for that, you know, 10 minutes of gameplay you have it for.
No, so true. I mean, can you actually pick out someone who did a bad job?
No.
Like, minimum good job, right?
Like, yeah, I'm actually... That's kind of a challenge now. I'm sure there must have been someone. There would have been some, like, additional voice actors of some, like, soldier, but, like, they had Nolan North do, like, the additional voice actors, and though some people are probably sick of hearing his voice, I think he's a great voice actor.
While we can be sick of him and his pervasiveness through our society and, like, culture, he's still great.
Yeah, there is a reason that he is cast in so many things.
Like, yeah, at this point he's everywhere, but still, like, and I think that everybody in this game, this is a game where there's not a moment where you go, oh, this person or oh, that person. It's like, no, everyone puts in a really solid performance.
Yeah.
All the characters' lines are very well written. Everyone's just, like,
the game. Like, because you said that you struggled to remember Sarah's name. I understand that's a thing that will happen with people, but one of the things I was super impressed about is the characterization of this game is so strong. I would probably remember every single character's name in it.
I'm terrible with names. That's why I forget them.
Yeah, so, but even minor characters like Frank, you know, like, I just remember his name. They do such a good job of making these people memorable. Like,
and they have character, and they're different, and
it's really, really well done. I mean, we were talking about... What were we talking about?
We're talking about themes and stuff like that.
Yeah, like, what I really do like about the way that the story is conveyed is they do a lot of it through cutscenes. Now, the Uncharted series in particular has received a lot of criticism for basically being a movie instead of a game, which I think is...
That's pretty harsh.
It's completely logical. I see where that... Especially, like you say, with a popcorn game like Uncharted. I think that's... It's a completely reasonable thing to say.
It's Indiana Jones the game.
Yeah. Like, a lot of how they convey the story is done through cutscenes and done... Like, there's not really a lot of player choices how the story unfolds.
It's very linear.
Yeah, it's a very linear game. And it's basically, like, the story happens without your control.
Yeah.
The gameplay is there for fun.
Yeah.
And I think that ultimately you could say the same thing about this. That this you don't get...
You don't get very much agency.
As far as the plot and the narrative are concerned. Yeah. And a lot of what they do convey about the plot is done in cutscenes and is done through dialogue. But quite frankly, after Bloodborne, this was such a fucking refreshing thing to play. Like... you always know exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Like, the very first scene is get Sarah to safety. And then the next scene is get back at Robert. And then, you know, once Robert's done, it's get the guns back. Like, you always know exactly what you're doing. And the way that they convey this stuff, even in these cutscenes, there's such a nuance of the way they're written and the way the characters are animated that you get this information in ways without them just having to, like, shout it down your throat.
This is a perfect example of why you'd want a linear game
to be
like a movie. Because it's like, you understand motivations, you understand what people are doing. The whole game reinforces this. Every part of it is working towards that.
Like, I know what I want, what I'm supposed to be doing, why it's important, and why I should care.
Yeah.
Why I personally should care, rather than just, like, why the world should care.
And, like, you can tap into... I think at every point in the game, you can tap into Joel's character and understand
his motivation. Yeah, he makes sense.
And even Ellie as well, in those sections you do play as her.
Yeah, I would say that Ellie's motivations are much clearer than Joel's.
Exactly.
Like, it can't be overstated how well the dialogue is written in this fucking game. Like, there's this moment early on, like the very first moment, the very first scene with Tess is one that stands out for me. Yep. So she comes in and it's obviously exposition is being done, but without her just going, we need to do X, Y, and Z. You know that she and Joel are partners. You know that they're both smugglers. You know that she's a capable fighter. You know that she's a good negotiator. You know that she's kind of a little bit in charge of Joel, but not really. They're mostly partners. You know that there's a dude called Robert they have beef with.
You also know their relationship too. Like, Joel is like asleep and wakes up and like has missed Tess being out. So you know there's a bit of friction going on.
Yeah, exactly. Well. Because like, you know they must have had some argument because gone off for a deal and she hasn't told him that they're doing the deal.
Brought him on.
And he's pissed at that, and like she's also she's been jumped by someone, but she fought them off, and so they communicate that she's a fighter.
She didn't fought them off.
Oh yeah,
she killed them.
Yeah, she fucked them up basically. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh no, she got away. She killed them.
Yeah, and so you know that capable. Like she's a completely capable person, and like you get this little sense that like there's. Like, you and I disagree about this a little bit, but, like, I get the sense that, like, there's a bit of sexual tension between them, but they've never kind of acted on it because it's always been, like, business first.
I feel like their relationship is, like, it was closer earlier, but it's kind of drifted apart lately.
Yeah.
But, again, that's kind of up... That's personal interpretation of how people react, and so that's just...
But it's all very real as well. Like, they have these arguments and stuff, and, like, it's not just clean, you know?
The point of that disparity between how we feel, though, is to illustrate the kind of depth that they use to...
Yeah, and see, like, that's just a minor reading difference. But, like they have... They communicate so fully that they have history before this moment that you're seeing them at. And, like...
I have seen full-budget movies that haven't told as much
exactly.
in a scene as The Last of Us does in this moment.
Like, yeah, it's really, really well done. And so, like, there's a bunch of, like, reasonable things you can say about, look, video games should use the strength of video games. They should tell stories through gameplay. That's completely fair.
Yeah.
This was still great.
There's no reason why a game, while using all of the strengths of games, can't then use the strengths of film.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you use the strengths of something?
Mm.
They're strengths. That's why we hold them up.
Yeah.
The game, it's like,
it's really, really, really awesome stuff. And, like, when we talk about stuff like dialogue, it isn't just that it happens. You know what I mean? It isn't just that it conveys the idea. It's like every character has such a clear, distinct voice and stuff. It's just, I was really impressed by it.
Yeah, not only what they're saying, but how they say it and why they say it. It's like every moment you could stop any conversation and like break down. It's like this character, you know, is talking about it. Things in this way, even like the blank hunters NPCs, right? It's like, oh, Joel's been killing their friends, so they're gonna find him and put him down, and
stuff like that. And some of that can get a little bit generic because they're not major characters; they're obviously all very one-dimensional.
Yeah, and their frequent reappearance is obviously just to establish like kind of gameplay aspect.
Yeah.
And as the game, because the game does jump between, it kind of does this thing where it jumps between the zombies,
and
the human. Kind of characters.
And you have your bandits and your military and all that kind of thing.
If there's anything with the game, it kind of does go back and forth. Mm. So it goes human section, free roaming. Zombie section, free roaming.
Yeah, but we were talking about pacing before. I think the game nails pacing in that regard.
I, I don't say that it doesn't engage me
yeah.
and build tension. It does. And yeah. it uses the strengths of all of its different enemies in the game. It uses all of the enemies in the game to their strengths. The zombies are creepy and weird, and it puts them in dark corners and it traps you with them.
Yeah.
Right? And the humans are in large, expansive environments where you can move around and be a bit more tactical.
Mm.
Right? And it plays to that strength, and the pacing is it's very well built.
The pacing of like the way they introduce characters and stuff as well is very, very impressive. Like, you have an idea of who Bill is before you meet him, because Tess and Joel have completely natural reasons to talk about Bill before you get to that point in the game. Tommy comes up a lot between Marlene and Joel. Like, none of these conversations feel forced, but then you'll meet this character, and it doesn't feel like that character has just emerged out of nowhere.
Yeah,
you know? And
no,
so,
that's
like,
true, actually.
You don't get, like, a sense of Deus Ex Machina when Bill shows up.
I think the only two characters that kind of pop up is, oh, man, I'm so bad with names, the two characters you find in the Hunter's Town.
Oh, Henry and Sam.
Henry and Sam.
Yeah.
But the reason why they're there makes perfect sense. Like, this is a town people
move through. You are right. They do kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, but of all of the ones, like, they're the only ones who kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But then when you look at the world of the game, it's like, sure, it's coincidence, but it doesn't break the theme. It doesn't break the flow.
The NPCs do still talk about the previous group of tourists and how they're trying to track them down.
Yeah.
They do have a very natural way of bringing that stuff up. So we should talk about some of the big parts of the actual narrative, I guess, because the game is lauded for its big story. And like I said at the start of the podcast, I was sitting there being all like, oh, for fuck's sake, if it just has the most generic zombie movie ending ever, I'll be.
And he sacrifices himself to save Ellie. The end.
And Ellie is sad, and it's just like,
but then she lives to save the humanity.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be something like that, and I think I said this on the last podcast we did, where, like, if that had been the ending, I would have been quite angry. Not at the designers of the game, a trope's a trope, but at gamers in general for being so flawed by such a shitty ending. That's not the ending! Yeah, so there we go. I should actually say at this point, actually, the ending was spoiled for me before I played this game.
Oh, it did. Was it, David?
Yeah!
Who spoiled it for you?
Ah, you know, just some person I used to consider a good friend until they betrayed me in this way.
Man, I would not trust that person enough to sit in a room with them and record a podcast.
So yeah, John, by kind of accident, and ruined the end of this game. He shared a video on Facebook.
My bad.
Yeah, and it wasn't like directly to me or anything, but in that video, they talk about the ending of The Last of Us because they wanted to talk about some point about this something was going on.
Didn't need to mention the end of the game.
It was kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, it was kind of unnecessary.
But anyway.
But I knew what the big twist at the end of the game was before I played it. So I'm going to reiterate here. We are going to say what the big twist ending is here, all right? I'm going to give you a good 15 seconds. We'll just talk about other stuff. To take out your headphones, do whatever you want to do.
Okay, I think that's enough.
Yeah, that's enough.
But let's not actually do 15 seconds of us vamping.
I think we've done it, though. We're at that point now. It's not that hard to hit 15 seconds. All right,
fine, David. I guess we can do it if we did.
So the big spoiler ending, the big twist ending.
Spoiler.
Spoiler.
Warning.
Spoiler warning. The ending of The Last of Us, it turns out that the reason you're trying to get Ellie to the other side of the country is so that some scientists can figure out why she's immune to the zombie, to the Cordyceps virus.
I'm surprised we didn't mention that earlier.
Well, I mean, I figure that most people know the premise of the game, right? Yeah. But it turns out that in order to get what they need out of Ellie, they're going to have to kill her because they need to basically dissect her brain.
Yeah, like remove her whole brain.
Yeah, because that's where the Cordyceps actually grow and all that kind of thing. And so Joel, at this point, this is not a gameplay choice. This is all scripted. Joel finds out about that and they're concerned that, like, as soon as
Marlene, she understands clearly how Joel's going to react.
Yeah,
because she's like, "Whoa, he brought her all the way over here."
And this is another really great example of a good cutscene, right? So Marlene knows, you're right, she knows that Joel is going to react in a particular way.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, but she still tells him what's going to happen. And you can tell that she's actually conflicted a little bit about why she's doing it. And one of the big senses I got from why she says it is that she's too excited about the prospect of curing the zombie virus to not say that they can do it.
She's explaining her reason for being comfortable with the decision she's making to Joel to help make him comfortable.
Yeah, and it's like I think that she knows on some level that he'll react badly, but she doesn't think that he's gonna, because she also thinks he's a prick, right? She thinks he's a huge asshole who just does nothing for money.
And he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah,
so, like,
and he
wrong.
Is, but by this point, obviously, he and Ellie have formed a...
While he's a jerk, they have formed a bond.
Yeah, and Joel finds out and... He just
kills everyone. Yeah,
so he goes through, he kills all the Fireflies, which are like the people's resistance.
Yeah.
He kills a whole bunch of soldiers, goes into the room where they're about to start the operation. Ellie shoots some scientists.
Just in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, I did that.
Yeah, I shot one scientist in the face.
I may have shot all of them.
Yeah.
I thought it was cinematically appropriate.
Yeah, and so then you take Ellie out. Marlene tries to stop you. You kill her as well. It's pretty brutal.
Joel just literally goes, nope.
Yep.
And just kills everyone.
And so the basic thing that's happened here is that Ellie's life matters to Joel much more than finding a cure and undoing what's happened to the world.
It's a choice that reminds me of Life is Strange, actually, now I think about it.
Yeah, basically. There's a lot about these two games that remind me of each other.
Games that use storytelling well.
Yeah, use storytelling well. They're about a desire to protect a teenage American girl.
It's a story
set,
of
it's
love.
Set in the wilderness, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So one of the big themes in the game, and again, I'm turning my literature brain back on a bit here. Over and over again, you get these little hints at one of the big things of the game is like, what cost is a fair cost for your survival?
Yeah.
Like, how many other people's lives are worth your own and stuff like that? So, like, Joel talks a number of times about how, you know, there's a point where you get ambushed by bandits who are going to kill you and take your shit. And Ellie's like, oh, how did you know that they were going to do that? And Joel's like, I've been on both sides and stuff like that. Like, you know that Joel's done some pretty horrific shit to survive.
Yeah. And there's that scene also where he tortures those two guys. And let's be clear, he does that well-practiced.
Yeah, right? Very well-practiced.
The way he sets that up is like, oh, that's not something a random person would do. That's someone who knows how to get information out of people.
Yeah.
Joel's not a good guy.
Yeah, he's not a good guy. And it, like I said, it does come up a couple of times. It's like, you know, you go through this bandit. These bandits, they'll kill a couple of what they call tourists and take their stuff so that they can eat and shit like that. And it's like, you know, we're killing them because they want to kill us. So, I mean, it's slightly more justified, but ultimately it is still about trading the lives of others to maintain your own. And the game very deliberately points to that a lot. And it comes to that ultimate head at the end where it's like, do you save the planet, effectively?
Yeah.
Do you save the human race or Ellie?
Yeah. And I think that something that Joel says near the end of the game to Ellie to sort of explain, not indirectly, because we haven't talked about that part yet,
yeah,
but we'll in a sec. But he says that you got to find something to live
for. Like, yeah, you have to find something to fight for.
Fight for, right?
And that's the other big theme in the game. Yeah.
And what Joel does by the end of the game is he decides that, basically, to me, my interpretation is he decides that Ellie is now his reason to live.
Yeah.
And that's how he will survive.
And it's clear that, like, that choice was made by him earlier in the game, right? But it also just throws a bunch of other stuff into light. Like, there's a point where he and Tommy, his brother, are having an argument, and he's all like, you know, I protected you. I'm the reason you're alive. You owe me. And when you come back to this point later where he's like, you got to find something to fight for, it's like, no, actually, dude, you're alive because of fucking Tommy. You're alive because you decided that Tommy was the thing you needed to start fighting for. You know what I mean? Like, there's that sense that, like, it's not necessarily the most healthy thing from a message for a game to promote. Like, there's a bit of toxic masculinity, I'm the protector type situation. But that idea that, like, the only reason that Joel does anything is because of the relationships he has. Like, so, like, there's that whole relationship with Tess.
Yeah.
And even though it is business first or whatever, like, she has that line, something along the lines of, you know, there's got to be some sense of obligation here. She's asking Joel to do something for her. Like,
she actually asks Joel to, like, take Ellie in.
Yeah, because Joel doesn't want to take Ellie to the Fireflies after something falls through. But, like, you know, she's saying, you've got to do this for me. There's got to be some sense of obligation here. And so, like, for the whole first part of it, the thing he's fighting for is Tess as well. And so, like, you can paint that train, those linkings of ideas that, like, Joel is on paper a bad person. The reason he's our hero is because we like him. Because basically, that sounds tautological, but the reason he's our hero is he's the one we're following. But it kind of, I feel like the game very deliberately points to this idea that when you're killing people to protect Ellie, that's no more noble. It's only, like, subjectively noble.
Yeah.
And that also is played a lot with when you meet the character of David, who's the bandit leader.
Yeah. Of the cannibals.
And so, again, we have the on-paper justification. They're cannibals, we're the good guys, right? But you see him, he's talking about how, like, he's trying to find Joel because, like, there's a point where you kill a couple of his guys to escape, and then that community of bandits or whatever is like, we've got to take care of this Joel guy because he's killed a bunch of our dudes. And so, like, you see that, like, even though it is painted very antagonistically and there are a couple of reasons why David is satisfying to eventually kill, they're doing things for the exact same reasons. And there's a point where he says something about, like, oh, we've got women and children that need to eat. That's not a lie. Like, you think that he's lying at one point, but when you're sneaking through the camp, they're all like, hey, did we get the kids safe? And they're like, don't worry, they're locked up. This guy's not going to fuck with them. And you're like, these people are scared for their friends and family because I'm here, you know?
The reasons why they're doing things are a bit more diverse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was at that moment when I felt bad for them.
Yeah.
And I felt bad that we kept having... There was no moment where we could try and be like, whoa, let's just... fuck off, let's back away. Like,
yeah.
And fucking Joel, where he executes, he does it so many times. Like, he'll put people down. And I think he does it to Marlene at the end.
Yeah.
But she's like, let me go. Right. Yeah. I have so much good to do.
Yeah.
You know, I can help so many people. Yeah, so
he shoots her once and she's on the ground bleeding out. So he can clearly get away.
Yeah.
And then he comes back to her as she's bleeding out and she's like, just let me go. You can leave, just let me go.
And then he says, you'll just come after her.
Yeah.
And he shoots her.
Straight through the head.
Straight through the head, cold as ice. And, like, that's just... I don't think it's presented as a noble thing.
Oh, not at all. It's very dark. You know that he's right, though.
Yeah.
Well, you 100% know that he's right.
It's true, but and it doesn't make it any better.
Yeah. So this is... We're coming to the point, this is probably my favorite moment in the whole fucking game, almost. You go through that. So this is a big thing that we missed. We didn't explain. Ellie's unconscious through that whole section where she gets put under for surgery. She doesn't know that she's going to die.
Yeah.
You kill a bunch of people. You take her out, and it's as you're driving away that she actually comes to, and she wakes up in the surgical gown, and she's like, "What am I wearing? Where am I?"
Yeah.
And Joel basically he lies to her about what happened. He says that they've actually found dozens of people who are immune, and it hasn't helped them at all. They've actually given up looking for a cure.
That's such a detailed lie.
Yeah, and it's like, he comes through it, and like, you can see Ellie is really dejected because she's gone through all of this stuff, and she was like, I thought we were going to be able to help, you know, humanity. But the reason Joel's lying to her is because he knows that if she knew that she could give up her life to cure the cordyceps virus, she'd probably do it.
Yeah.
And so he needs to lie to her about that. So you go to another scene later on where they've been hiking, and this is probably a week or two later. And they bring it back up, and Ellie turns to Joel and says something along the lines of, I need to know what happened. I need to know that you're not lying to me about what happened with the fireflies.
Yeah, she flat out
looks him right in the eyes and says, I need to know that everything you're telling me of the fireflies is true. And Joel just kind of takes a moment. He steps back and says, I swear. And you cut back to her, extreme close-up, and she just goes, okay.
Game end.
And it's just like, as black screen, I'm sitting there, it's like, she doesn't fucking believe him.
Who would?
And it's just like, it was just such a perfect scene. Like, it's just like,
it's a culmination.
You can see everything in her face about, like, she doesn't believe him. She now knows that, like, their relationship is affected by that, and you can tell. But at the same time, you can also see that she's just like she wants to, she knows that he's lying, but doesn't want him to be, and he's kind of masking it. It was so fucking well done.
And it's also like, she doesn't actually know what happens, like, we do, which is why we're colored in. She knows that he's not telling the truth. She doesn't know why or what extent.
Yeah.
And like, the range of that. And like,
yeah. And it's like, you can see in that moment, like, we go back to that cost of surviving, right? Where I feel like in a way she knows that he's lying, but chooses to trust him because it's like, I know this. This is what is alive for me. It sounds like a stupid thing to say, but like, she sacrifices her sense of doubt because she and Joel survive together, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
So the game ends with her kind of like putting aside that.
Yeah, I think that like, she completely doesn't believe him, but chooses to. She consciously says that matters less than maintaining
survival.
Our shared, you know, us against the world survival type situation.
That's a good point.
And I just thought it was such an amazingly good fucking ending.
It's a very interesting way to like, once you frame it like that, it's just like this wonderful culmination of the whole game that builds up to this moment.
Yeah, it's so good. And like, I was saying before, like, I hate shit with zombies in it, and I haven't seen The Walking Dead. I don't think I'd be a big fan of it because it front loads gore and shit. But like, this is easily the best zombie thing I've done ever. That really? Was great. And so, dear David from 2013, you were wrong.
You were wrong, David.
You were wrong. You should have just played this game.
Yep. Well, obviously, at the time, you wouldn't have liked it because you were just set up to not like it.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Sometimes... And so I did actually try, remember? Yeah. I did try to play it.
And,
but like...
and you might play this in 20 years from now and you will hate it just as much because our experience, like the way we perceive media, changes as we change because our feelings are temporary. But yeah, I think it was a beautiful end to a game. And it was just
really, really strong narrative experience, really, really good ending. And I like. You know, this was not Mass Effect 3. This was not a pretty good game until it ended and then I hated it. This was really good and everything built towards the thing.
I think there was a real sense. I think I found it with a lot of with the Uncharted games as well to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
I saw something about Naughty Dog as a studio. They understand the whole piece.
Yeah.
And they really work as every part fits together to support the whole experience.
Yeah.
And then it's just self-contained and just wonderful. Wonderful game to play. It was one of my favorite games. And
yeah, and it's so great that I played it now because now I'm so excited for The Last of Us.
Oh, so am I. Like, really.
Like, it's so rare that I would sit there and go, okay, yeah, that game sold that console. Well done, Sony. You have sold me a PlayStation 4.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons why the PS4, when it came out, had a lot of powerhouses from the last one they brought across.
Mm.
I'm
so interested in that. You were going to talk about the Last of Us 2 trailer.
Yeah, so I watched the trailer.
Yeah.
And I played the game years ago. I watched the trailer. I was it was like, oh, this will be exciting.
Yeah.
I replayed the game, fell in love with it again.
Yeah.
And then rewatched the trailer. And the trailer, I understand it's basically a teaser trailer.
It's very short. Well, it is you're very right. It is just a teaser trailer, but it's 4.5 minutes long.
Good lord.
a lot of meat on dem teaser bones.
And it sets up a very beautiful looking old world and all that narrative stuff, that environmental stuff is very exciting. But the kind of story it's portraying of like Ellie as an older character and like her, like Joel comes in, I assume it's Joel. You don't actually see his face.
It's definitely Joel.
Right. Because he's fucking whatever. Yeah.
You hear his voice.
What does he say? Because I've forgotten all the words.
He says something along the lines of, you sure you want to do this, kiddo?
And then she says something about wanting to kill them all.
Yeah.
And after replaying The Last of Us and being aware of the themes of the game and like how it talks about survival and the costs and then how that twist comes into effect Ellie and define who she is. Mm. It just seems like a trailer that was devoid of a lot of that.
See, I agree with you. I think it's very simple what they're showing us in the trailer.
Admittedly, it is a teaser trailer
for
a game that's coming out. But
if you listen to the lyrics of the song, I don't want to do a huge trailer breakdown, but like if you listen to the lyrics of the song, what I get from that is the Fireflies are still looking for her. They've come to her and she's fought them off. And now, like maybe she's got in touch with Joel because of that. Maybe they've been apart for some reason.
I'm sure.
And so I think there's a lot of interesting stuff where like you, and like this isn't a surprise to me. Like I said, when I watched that end cutscene of Last of Us, I knew that Ellie knew that Joel was lying, right? And so when I see this, it all just plays with all of my expectations about it. But yeah, excited.
After replaying The Last of Us, I'm sure they can handle it being interesting.
Yeah.
It's just, I get worried when it's just...
And I feel like this might be one of those situations where, like, the Firefly shit is... It's a threat. It's not the plot.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there are going to be points where it's like, oh, shit, here are some more Fireflies. But I think that's going to be, like, a B story. I don't know what the A story is going to be.
But there's so much they could do. And, like, I'm actually really excited. Whereas some experiences, I'm like, no, let it end.
Yeah.
This one, I'm like, I trust them. They did a really good job. Let's see where it goes.
I could have lived with them just leaving it.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'm with you. My general rule is, if it ended well, leave it. Make something new.
Yeah.
But I am interested in seeing this and seeing Ellie post all of this stuff and all that kind of thing. One thing we should actually talk about very briefly as well is... the DLC for the original one. Did you play that?
No.
Right. Okay. So I won't go through the whole plot, but one of my favorite sections in The Last of Us original is where you actually play as Ellie because Joel has been injured.
Oh, it's actually a really great sequence.
Yes, it's really, really awesome. You know, you start off with her just, like, looking for food, and then there's all of this stuff where she's got to, like...
I was actually thinking of doing, like, maybe a mini episode or something where we just talk about the portrayal of Ellie and, like, how capable she is and the dynamic between her and
Joel.
Yeah,
we can always revisit Ellie as another thing.
Because, like, I don't think we talked about it enough. We kind of...
Yeah.
We did, like, there's a lot to cover, and we try to keep, I don't know if you know, we try to keep these shows to roughly an hour.
Yeah.
Right?
We try and fail to keep these shows to roughly an hour.
Good lord, you've no idea. The Witcher was 2 hours plus. Like, Dave Miracle worked that. He needs to be heard, people.
I'm a master editor.
I like how you said that so dejectedly. And, like, there's a lot of, like, the portrayal of Ellie and a lot of characters in being more capable than Joel lets them.
Yeah. There are big story moments with that.
And the DLC?
Yeah, in the DLC, we see Ellie needing to take... It's more... Because you get a little bit of that where Joel's been injured and Ellie has to, like, find food and protect him from bandits and shit. The DLC is more of that, right? The whole DLC you play just as Ellie. And one of the big things that's revealed in that is that Ellie is attracted to girls, right? So she mentions vaguely her friendship with a girl called Riley to Joel.
Yes.
And that Riley. But you can see when you do this, this takes place in sort of partly flashback, partly present as she's taking care of Joel.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. So you have flashbacks to her time with Riley.
Oh.
Before they get infected, and then present day scenes with, which is around the winter period of the main game. And in some of the flashbacks, you see that it wasn't just a friendship, that they were romantically attracted to one another. And it's great. So representation is something that a lot of games really fucking lack. And this game does really well and really naturally and easily.
Yeah.
So Ellie and Riley aren't the only gay characters. There's also Bill and Frank.
Yeah.
And that's done really well as well. My only little thing about that is they do the whole, Frank was my partner, where he doesn't bring it up. But then again, that could be Bill's.
Okay, so I would disagree. I would say that when Bill admits... Like, Bill says Frank's part... When he says Frank's his partner, when he explains that, I feel like that's... Like a man trying to explain a relationship in a single word to a stranger.
Yeah.
Right? He goes, oh, Frank was my partner, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want to get... He doesn't want to get into the details of
that. It's hard to tell whether or not Bill is trying to keep it under wraps. Where he's saying, he was my scavenging partner, or if he was my romantic partner.
So when I see that whole scene, I see the whole portrayal of Bill and Frank. I think of that as a man who's... He feels abandoned because his partner abandoned him.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Right? It turns out not intentionally.
No, intentionally.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. He
They get it.
They basically break up.
Yeah.
And then Frank is like, I'm leaving. I'm going to take... I'm going to take some of this stuff that we got together and get out of this town because I can't be around you anymore. He leaves like some notes and shit.
The part I thought wasn't well handled was the gay porn magazine that Ellie finds.
Yeah.
I thought that was just like, you didn't need to put that in.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, I think they put that in there just so that no one could accuse them of ambiguity. You know what I mean? Which,
that's a good point. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very good point because I get annoyed when they're... You explain it.
So when you've got this ambiguity about Bill, whether or not he and Frank are gay, I think that that's the character of Bill not being sure if he can tell Joel this and Joel will be cool with it. And, you know, that sense of, like, you know, heteronormative masculinity and shit, rather than the game wondering if the audience can handle it. And so they have that moment after all of that scene and stuff plays out. It isn't designed to be like a shield or anything like that. I do feel like if they didn't have that, I would ask a question. Are the game makers uncool with gayness, or is Bill not sure if Joel is cool with gayness?
Okay.
And with having that magazine in there kills all of that ambiguity and makes me go very much, okay, that was a character thing. That wasn't a, you know, Naughty Dog is potentially homophobic type thing. Right.
When you frame it like that, what goes from just, to me, being over the top goes from being like, oh, they're staking their claim a little and being like, no, this is it. And then, of course, with the...
You as the homophobic game player, don't get to rationalize around this. Yes. You know, like, I guess,
but, like, especially with Ellie, the DLC with Ellie, though.
Yeah.
I guess that, to me, that's pretty apparent.
Oh, yeah, they kiss.
Okay, but then I guess you don't want to have, like... You don't want it to be like, oh, the lesbian love story is fine to portray, but the gay love story is not.
Yeah, and you also get this because the Riley and Ellie... are alone the whole story. It's just the two of them, so they don't have to be coy for the sake of other people.
Sure.
Whereas Bill doesn't know if it is safe to say this shit to Joel. And so I actually thought a lot of that stuff was really well put together, and it does something, the Bill story does something that I very much like, is that it has a character in the world being gay and depicts that as totally normal, but doesn't do so by erasing the difficulties of being gay in a homophobic world, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make a massive deal out of Bill being gay, but it also doesn't erase the fact that homophobes still exist as well. It isn't just like, hey, this guy's gay and it's cool, everyone. Everything's fine.
I mean, like, what's the biggest part with Bill? Bill is kind of an abrasive loner. Like,
yeah.
That's his main character.
And trait. I really love that as well, because that's such a rare characterization of gay men, is that he's this, like, quite tough, almost sociopathic kind of... Yeah. Abrasive personality, and it's really interesting to see a lot of traits we typically associate with toxic masculinity in a gay man. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think always good. It's always a good representation when it's person first.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, he is gay, but that isn't his sole defining trait. Something else very cool on representation as well is that Riley is black. So we have a black queer character, which is very rare in Western media. That's cool. She's a very fully realized character in the same way that Bill is. It's not queerness first. And basically every named character you meet is some kind of minority, right? So you've got Tess, you've got Marlene, you've got Bill and Frank, like we said.
Tess, sorry? Question mark?
Tess is a woman.
Oh my God, John.
you know that she's not a white dude, yeah?
I don't know.
In fairness, it's not strictly correct to say that women are minorities, but you know what I'm trying to say. They're not just hegemonic white dudes.
It was my fault for focusing so much.
A slight side effect of that is that it means that basically every named character that dies is a minority, which is... But this is one of those things where, like, that happens because they're doing everything so well. It's like, if we're doing a paint by numbers, is this social justice? 10 thumbs up. None of the characters die because they're gay or because they're black or anything like that. Like, I feel like all of the deaths are because of the choices and shit that the characters make in the situations they find themselves in. I really did like the representation in this. The only named white dude characters are David and
the side.
Tommy, yeah. Tommy obviously is Joel's brother, yeah. But I was thinking of David's sidekick.
All right, yeah.
Whose name I can't remember. Steven, I think Jason, it might have been. Or... Yeah, something. It's another generic white dude name.
Yeah, doesn't matter, he dies.
Yeah, Nolan North.
Yeah. Well, now I'm just excited to play that DLC for the game.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun.
And also excited to see what happens to Last of Us 2.
So yeah, no.
Good run.
Yeah, we've been talking about... We say this at the end of every episode. I had a fucking great experience with this game, and so successful podcast.
Yay!
Another successful episode.
Podcast is success.
Yeah, especially after Bloodborne, where it was only a very moderate success. It's nice for me, anyway. It's nice to be like, fuck yeah, this was amazing.
It's good to be positive.
Yeah,
you know,
like almost exclusively positive.
Sunshines and lollipops. It's what we... Yeah, we don't here to beat up things.
Yeah.
We just want to discuss them.
Yeah, we want to talk about our heart feelings.
Heart feelings on the inside of our flesh things.
And make our very important white male opinions known.
Yes, especially both of us need to do this. It's like, good Lord.
Yeah.
I could not survive if I did not let people know my white male opinions.
Yeah, if I couldn't yell at people on social media.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically a removal of my First Amendment rights, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. It'd be censorship to remove it.
So. Just so, because I know there are Australians who cringe when I said that, I understand that we don't have First Amendment rights here. I do know that. We do not actually technically have protected speech.
Yeah, cool. So what's the next game?
The next game we are playing is something I've been looking forward to, like on and off for a really long time, and that's The Beginner's Guide.
Ooh, The Beginner's Guide. I played this through with my best friend and soulmate, Ollie. We played through lots of games together, and that was a very, very interesting experience, and I am excited to see you.
Yeah, so I think I'll have a lot of fun with this. Normally, I am really cautious when I consume a piece of art that's about the art form that it appears in.
And let's be
and
clear.
It's a huge recipe for fuck off wankdom.
If we're going to talk about games as art, the beginner's guide is an art game.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if you to put it in a genre, I would put it in the genre of art.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it, there's no doubt in my mind. And so, like, I am very interested in seeing that. I generally hate stuff like this, like the whole art about itself type thing. Like, when I was doing my writing course, you had so many people who would write a poem about how hard it is to write poetry. And you're just like, just jump off a bridge. Congratulations. You are an art student. Well fucking done. Birdman is one of my most hated movies. I despise Birdman.
Wow.
I found it very personally offensive as someone who has mental health issues. Because I felt like they were really, really deeply trivialized and romanticized in a way that I didn't feel like comfortable with at all.
Jeez.
And it's also one of these things that thinks it's so much smarter than it is.
It does certainly think it's smart.
A shallow, nothing movie that thinks everything it depicts is not how those things are, it's how those things appear in other movies.
Ugh.
And it's just, it's one of the, so I fucking hate it. I don't have anywhere near that much dread about Beginner's Guide. I trust that this is actually going to be a fairly intellectual and, like, well thought out piece. But there is a part of me that is cautious.
Yeah, that was a lot of venom for Birdman, so
I don't like it.
I got some. I mean,
here's a fun thing we can do. Tell me in the comments how wrong I am.
Feel free to tell us in the comments. Also, though,
there's gonna be one person who just accuses me of being like, oh, you just have a contrary opinion to get likes and shares.
I mean, let's be clear. Sometimes you do. You discussed how you kind of do get contrarian.
Well, I mean, that's not a performance. No, like, I'm not doing that just for the sake of...
But how do we know, David?
How do we know?
How do we know?
Let's just clear it up now. Yeah, I do that.
Yeah, done.
Problem You're solved. Right. There's no need to accuse me of it.
Hey, we just saved someone some time.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That recovered well. So, do all that other stuff. So, that's going to be good. Can't wait to play that. I'm going to play it again because it's
Beginner's Guide, yeah. I'm definitely going to give... What's that, like 5 hours long?
I said that. I looked it up on how long to beat, which is weird. And I swear, the people who play games for how long to beat do not play the game. They just run through it. They say it's an hour and a half there. So I'm going to say, I played through one day with, I think it might even be a 3 to 4 hour experience.
See, it took me an hour and a half to complete the Dr. Langeskov.
Oh.
And the Tiger and the Emerald or whatever that one's called. And that's like a 30-minute game. So.
Yeah. And that's a fun free game you can find on Steam.
So. Yeah, check that one out. So yeah, next time is The Beginner's Guide. Ultimately, should be a pretty interesting experience. Thanks for joining us once again for the Slowpokes. If you want to like, share, and subscribe our stuff, it's massively helpful. We're really new at this, and we don't really know how to get the word out.
We're idiots, so any help you can give us is just going to be thumbs up.
If you want to get in touch with us, the Slowpokes cast on Twitter. We have the slowpokespodcast@gmail.com is our email currently. That might update, but you should be able to get into us there. Anything else, Facebook, whatever, that's all on the website, slowpokespodcast.com.
We'll be stalking all of those comment sections and reading your detailed essays that you're sending in on how we're complete idiots.
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing, too. We're nowhere near, like, what, we're going to have, like, 4 comments on an episode, right? Oh, it's not going to be hard to read every single one of those.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm gonna
personally we're not fucking George R. R. Martin. We're not,
someone who's famous.
We're not the McElroys. We're not some... top end podcasters.
Yeah, we should stop saying things that are obvious and just say goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks. As I was saying, thanks so much for joining us. Next of us will be The Beginner's Guide, and I hope you have an awesome game time.
Time for games. Thumbs up. Have fun. Good luck with things.
Bye, guys.